The Housing Finance and Policy Committee will come to order, and I will note this meeting is taking place under House Rule 10.01. Ms. Hirsch, please take the roll.
Chair Houseman?
Present.
Houseman, present. Vice Chair Howard?
Present.
Howard, present. Representative Tice?
Tice, present.
Tice, present. Representative Egbadje?
Present.
Egbadje, present. Representative Bliss?
Present.
Bliss, present. Representative Gomez?
Gomez, present.
Gomez, present. Representative Hassan? Representative Heinrich?
Heinrich, present.
Heinrich, present. Representative Herr?
Present.
Herr, present. Representative Juergens?
Juergens, present.
Juergens, present. Representative Olson is excused. Representative Farr?
Farr, present.
Farr, present. And Representative Ryer?
Ryer, present.
Ryer, present. And Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Hirsch. The next item of business is approval of the minutes from Thursday, February 24. Representative Howard, have you had a chance to review those minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll move the minutes.
Members, any corrections? If not, please unmute yourselves, and all those in favor of adoption of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. Members, we have House File 616, a Representative Fisher bill up today, establishing a Lead Safe Homes grant program. Welcome to the committee, Representative Fisher. You've presented this bill to us in the past, and we are still working at it, as is Micah. Micah has been a loyal, hardworking partner on this bill. So, members, the first bill on the agenda is House File 616, establishing a Lead Safe grant program, authored by Representative Fisher. The chair moves that House File 616 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Fisher, welcome to the committee and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Chair Houseman and committee, for the opportunity to present House File 616. This is a bill to address the lead issue that we run into. We know that no lead is safe at all. No amount of lead is safe for children. And one of the areas that we have a lead issue has been in older housing, a lot of it in rental units, where there's lead paint that is out there. And so what this bill does is it establishes the Lead Safe Home Program, grant program, which would be known as the Dust and Loop Shields Act, to address that issue, to provide dollars out there for testing and to be able to address the issue of lead paint in rental units. With that, I'd like to turn it over to my testifiers, who will do an excellent job of the presentation.
Our first testifier is Sue Wadlaw Phillips, the Executive Director of the Metropolitan Interfaith Council on Affordable Housing. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, and good morning, Chair Houseman and committee members, and thank you, Representative Fisher, for continuing to support and author the bill. My name is Sue Wattlow Phillips. I'm honored to serve God as the Executive Director of MICA and President of the National Coalition for the Homeless, and I've also experienced homelessness as a teenager. MICA is the Metropolitan Interfaith Council on Affordable Housing. Our mission is to ensure everyone, without exception, has a safe, decent, accessible home that's affordable for them. 70% of our board and our staff are people that are from diverse communities, and over half of our board and staff are people that have experienced homelessness, housing instability, or discrimination. Our faith calls us to be a welcoming community and to love and to treat others the way that we want to be treated. So as we listen and work with people that have been impacted by homelessness, the housing instability, and unsafe housing, we work together with folks to create the solutions. And that's really the cornerstone of MICA's work, is working with people, listening, and creating solutions. So House File 616, the Lead Safe Home Bill, is also known as the Dustin Luke Shields Bill because it's named after Dustin, who was poisoned by lead paint. And his mother, Tysia, has been working over the last many years to prevent other children and families from going through the damage that happens to children's brains when they get any type of lead. And with Dustin, he became permanently disabled from the lead paint poisoning that happened to him and the impacts that that has on the entire family. So what I'd like to do is to show the brief video of Tysia telling her story.
Hi, my name is Tysia Fletcher, and I was residing in South Minneapolis when my children were poisoned by lip in 2010. My son was 10 months old, and he had to go to his normal well check. And when we went out to get his normal check, we discovered that he was poisoned. They test kids at the 10th month. From there, my daughter had to be tested as well because she was living in the same household. And both children were poisoned. And today, my son is mentally disabled and diagnosed with autism. So we participated in a window replacement program through Sustainable Resource Center. And once we had all of the windows replaced in the unit, because we income qualified, we were evicted. The landlord found some reason to evict us, and we had to move out of our Southside apartment to North Minneapolis. And this was in 2011. In May of 2011, North Minneapolis was hit with a tornado. My family was greatly impacted. We lost everything that we had, and this was the first time I became homeless. I had never experienced homelessness. I didn't know homeless people, but this was something that I did experience, and I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. So my family and I ended up in a Red Cross shelter, and this is when I met Enum Transitional Housing, and I also met the executive director of Enum in my pajamas. It was midnight, and this lady was still out working, helping families with questions and resources on finding new placement for themselves and their family. So during that time, I was offered a job with Enum Transitional Housing as a rapid exit worker, finding housing for homeless people. Again, I never knew anything about homelessness or its process. And it was by the grace of God that I was able to house about 30 families during that time in the shelter and during the tornado. So after working for Elam, I joined MICA, and I was a housing advocate there. And then we began to work on a land safety bill called the Dustin Luke Shields Act, which is my son's first and last name. And we have worked with a number of legislators. Karen Clark was the author of, Representative Clark was the author in the House, and Senator John Hoffman was the author in the Senate. Micah has helped me a lot with my organization, with legislation, and finding housing. Because being an employer of MICA, I had the opportunity to meet legislators I had never met. I never thought about going into the Capitol, didn't know how to do a 2-minute elevator speech. I learned so many wonderful, great tools to help me not only get the Dustin Luke Shields Act passed, but how to develop a bill and how to get it started and how to get it passed. So, if you're looking for an organization to teach you all these things, MICA is the best place for you to go.
Ms. Phillips, did you have any more comments?
Thank you, Chair Hausman. After Rochelle does her presentation, I do have a few closing comments, if I may, please.
All right. Thank you. So we will then have Rochelle Mananto-Poleska. Please correct my pronunciation if that was not right. The Director of Education and Outreach from the Sustainable Resources Center. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Yes. Thank you so much and good morning, Chair Hausman and committee members. My name is Rochelle Mananto-Poleska, and I'm the Director of Education and Outreach Program here at Sustainable Resources Center. We're a nonprofit organization dedicated to the advancement of lead poisoning prevention, weatherization, and healthy homes. I'm happy to be here to support the Lead Safe Homes Bill, because it will help prevent our children from being poisoned and their brains damaged by lead paint. This bill will help to keep our families and communities healthy and safe. I met Ticea and her son, Dustin, many years ago when she came to Sustainable Resources Center for our help. And through our LED education program, we offer free in-home visits and we assist families in the enrollment process for lead hazard reduction grants, such as for Hennepin County and City of Minneapolis. Through these grants, there are primarily federal resources that are available to low-income families to replace windows and paint stabilization, paint surfaces such as doors, trims, walls, and exterior components. I'd like to just share a couple slides with you. Here's some quick little PowerPoint presentation. All right. So can everyone see this? Here's some examples of lead. We see it all over in the walls, the windows, and the doors. Big red zones here, specifically in Minneapolis. 80% of homes were built before 1978, which is the key year the date lead-based paint was banned. And specifically, you'll see the red zones being in North and South Minneapolis, greatest risks for children for lead poisoning. Here's how lead enters the body. You can see lead is a neurotoxin. It affects the central nervous system, the brain, and it has many harmful effects on the children's intelligence, their behavior, and their growth. Anyone living in older homes built before 1978 may be at great risk. However, children and their behavior systems and crawling and putting everything in their mouth, discovering their world, are the greatest risk and they're most vulnerable. The biggest problem that we see is that families are just not aware about lead poisoning, the lead issues, the sources of lead, and the harmful health consequences of lead poisoning. Here's another side effect here. The ripple effects of childhood lead poisoning is great. So in addition to the permanent learning disabilities, aggressive behavior, and stunted growth that the child suffers, there's also social and economic consequences that impacts the child's future. The estimated cost of a lead poisoning child is $100,000 a year versus spending an approximate of $2,500 a year dollars a year on an apartment unit for lead reduction, such as paint stabilization and cleaning up with tools such as the HEPA vacuums. We need to shift our priorities towards preventing children from being exposed to lead poisoning in the first place. I really want to make sure that we spend our money and it makes sense to invest our money in preventative measures where we can save lives and save money and protect our future, the future of our children. During my 13 years at Sustainable Resource Center, I have seen many children suffering from the devastating health effects of lead poisoning. I've worked with families who live in apartment complexes where their children were poisoned in multiple different units. Parents are heartbroken. And had they known that there was lead hazards in those apartments and those rental property areas, they never would have moved there in the first place. I want you to think about your loved ones, your children, your grandchildren, nieces and nephews. Wouldn't you want every child to have a safe home environment, lead-free? The only way to know if a child is lead poisoned is through a lead test. And here are some pictures that tell about that. Unfortunately, with COVID, lead testing was declined drastically, and children who were living in unsafe home environments are still being at great risk. A resident can easily test their home using a lead check swab. Oh, and I just want to point, there's Leady Eddy. It's a mobile testing unit. We take it all throughout the whole state of Minnesota. It's a lot of fun if you have any events. And then a nurse doing a lead testing. It's just a simple finger poke. All right, here's a lead check swab. I encourage you all to go buy one. Home Depot sells them for $10. And basically, lead check swab is a simple test that can detect lead lead on wood, on ceramics, on toys within 30 seconds. If the test of the swab tip turns red, then that means that lead is present. This test is not intended to replace an inspection by a licensed lead inspector. We really recommend that all positive tests be followed up by a licensed lead risk assessor. So the landlord, property owner, homeowner, they can just call our agency and we can offer a free in-home visit and we can help them get enrolled into those lead hazard reduction grant programs that are available. And here's a little bit of information about the the window replacement grant programs and their requirements. Basically, I just want to end with, there's a lot of things in life that are out of our control, but lead poisoning is not one of these. I want to repeat this two times. Lead poisoning is 100% preventable. Again, it's 100% preventable. Okay, we have this opportunity now to do something to keep our children and families safe from lead. When given this opportunity today or in the future to vote on this, I hope you will agree with me and please support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pleska. And Ms. Phillips, did you have additional comments to close?
Yes. And I think, Rochelle, if you want to, great, thank you. House File 616 will prevent children like Dustin from being poisoned by lead paint and their brains damaged and becoming disabled. You received many handouts from us today and slides. According to the Minnesota Department of Health, 84% of the lead poisoning of our children in Minnesota is from lead paint. One in every three homes in Minnesota, that's apartments and single family homes, have lead paint in it. So that probably means a third of us here today has homes that have lead paint. I do. My home was built that I grew up in 1955. So I do test it and I do repaint often so that my nieces and great nieces and nephews don't end up being poisoned in my home. So on an average, 700 children each year are poisoned by lead, and there is no safe level for lead. Lead paint poisoning damages and destroys the mind and the potential of a young child, potentially for their entire life. And they struggle to understand instructions, struggle with rules, schools, and norms. It impacts the family as a normal child's brain changes and their behavior is erratic. I've watched Dustin grow up and he's doing better now, but he really had a really, really, really rough childhood. He's now a teenager. We as a community member lose the opportunity of potential teacher, doctor, police officer, policymaker, as these children are poisoned by something that is totally preventable. As Rochelle said, it costs us $100,000 per year per child if children become disabled for the rest of their life. That means we're going to spend $6 to $7 million on each child over a lifetime. That's medical expenses, special ed, housing support, case management, PCAs. If 150 children become disabled in Minnesota because of lead paint, we will spend $1 billion in their lifetimes supporting them. That's the same amount of money that it would take for us to make sure that all the homes in Minnesota were safe from lead. What we are asking you to do to pass again is House File 616. You've passed it last year, and it's been in the omnibus bill a few times and in conference committee. We want to have at least $1 million to begin to expand our work to prevent our children, grandchildren, nieces, and nephews from being poisoned by lead paint. By testing the homes to see if they have lead paint and encapsulating or repainting over the surfaces to make them safe again, this costs $2,500 per unit. This is an eligible expense in the American Rescue Plan funds. And now clearly we have $9.253 billion available to meet the needs of Minnesotans here in the resources that we have available. Lead paint poisoning is preventable. Let's protect our precious children's lives and their future and help them all be all that God created them to be. Please support House File 616. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Phillips. And members, are there questions for the testifiers or the bill author? Representative Hassan.
I thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have a question. I just have a comment. I want to thank Rep. Fisher for bringing this bill. It's a really important bill. No child should have to. It's something that's preventable, but it happens, and it should not. I have a two-year-old, and I am super conscious about what she puts in her mouth. Knowing that the environment that I'm in is safe for her just gives me a peace of mind. And I know that every parent would do anything possible to make their kids healthy and happy. So this is an issue that impacts lower income communities and PIPOC communities in the urban core disproportionately. My district suffers, you know, many young people in my district suffer from lead poisoning. And I'm glad you're carrying, you know, the legacy of former Rep. Karen Clark, who used to represent my district. So thank you very much. And I want to thank the testifiers for sharing their personal story with us and for fighting for this. This is a really important, no child should be exposed to lead in this day and age. And I am happy to support this. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, Hoden covered a number of the things that I wanted to say, but I just wanted to add a couple things. First is that there are states, there are cities, and there are states where in order to get a rental license, you have to test for lead. Basically, our system now, which does not require that a landlord test for lead, which as we've heard is a potent neurotoxin for children, means that we are using children as lead detectors. The only time when a landlord has to disclose a lead hazard is when they are aware of it, but they don't have to test for it. And so oftentimes somebody only becomes aware of a lead hazard that's in a rental property when a kid gets sick. And as Ms. Watlov Phillips talked about, right, the societal cost of allowing a little kid to get sick with lead poisoning is immense. So, you know, I appreciate this effort and that it's a grant program. It really is not enough. It's not sufficient. We should not be using little kids as lead evaluation monitors. We should not wait until a baby gets sick, a kid like Dustin has his entire life changed before we require property owners to take action. It is, you know, I believe it's a basic piece of responsibility that, you know, if you are renting a property, an apartment or a house to somebody, that you should be able to tell them that their baby's not going to be poisoned by living there. So, you know, while I appreciate this effort, I really feel like we do need to put into place some standards around requiring landlords to test for lead as a precondition for getting a rental license. The other piece that I wanted to mention briefly is that the actionable lead level for lead has been cut relatively recently, I would say in the last 10, 15 years, from 10 micrograms per deciliter of blood to 5, which is good, right? However, there is no safe level of lead exposure for a kid or for a baby. Any amount of lead can have really intense impacts on a child's development and their kind of impulse control and all of those impacts that we heard about. You know, from what I've read, it's like 2 micrograms per deciliter or even less, you see the same impacts that you do at 5. And the only reason, right, that we don't have a zero tolerance policy for lead is because it's too expensive. It's not because of science. It's not because if a baby has a 3.5 or a 4, it's safe for them. So I just wanted to mention those things. I mean, this is like our testifier said, this is 100% preventable. And we need to be taking more steps to require that landlords test for lead, that they disclose that to families, and that we really like take action as in pursuit of the public good to really get lead out of rental housing altogether once and for all. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Fisher, final comments on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, for the opportunity to have the bill presented. I want to thank the testifiers today, particularly Ms. Watlov Phillips, who has done an outstanding job of advocating for this over the years. We would not still be pushing this if we did not have her strong support from her and from MICA to make sure that we are aware of the subject and that we need to do something. I strongly ask for this to be included in your omnibus bill. Thank you for your time and the opportunity.
And what we've learned from her and from Micah and others is they don't give up.
That's right.
And that's the good news. Thank you, Representative Fisher, and to your testifiers, House File 616 is laid over. The next bill on the agenda is House File 2463, Representative Ryer. Would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 2463 be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary Finance and Civil Law.
Thank you, Representative Ryer. You have an amendment to your bill. Would you like to move that now to get the bill in proper shape? Maybe just speak briefly to the amendment.
Yes, I would like to move the A2 amendment, Madam Chair. The amendment is a technical amendment with minor changes. The only substantive change, I think, is changing the amount of time for remediation from 180 days to 120 days. Thank you.
Representative Ryer moves the A2 amendment. I don't see any hands up. All those in, we need to unmute for this one. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the A1 is adopted. To your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm here today to talk about House File 2463, a bill that requires landlords to test their property for radon, to disclose the results to tenants, and to mitigate radon if found. This is a basic safety bill. As you all likely know and will hear more about later today, radon poses serious health threats to people who are exposed to it. And because radon is colorless, odorless, and tasteless, people are not aware when they are exposed. In Minnesota, radon exposure causes an estimated 600 deaths per year from lung cancer. 600 deaths. These are avoidable deaths. We simply need to expand the Minnesota Radon Awareness Act to include rental properties. This should be a basic responsibility for people offering properties for rent. We owe that to the people of our state. I want to thank the University of Minnesota Law School Community Legal Partnership for Health Clinic for your efforts on this issue since 2018. Your determination and focus are greatly appreciated, and I hope that we can get this legislation passed this year. I ask you all for your support to vote this bill out of our committee and on to its next stop with the Committee on Judiciary Finance and Civil Law. We have a number of testifiers today who will explain the bill in more detail. You bring technical knowledge and personal experience. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to turn it over to them. Thank you.
Thank you. We first of all have Carly Michaud, the Student Director, Community Legal Partnership for Health Clinic at the University of Minnesota. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. I'm Carly Michaud. Thank you, Madam Chair. I am representing the students of the Community Legal Partnership for Health Clinic. And indeed, our students have been working on this bill over the years, and we were looking for a way to help the community and realized radon is an unmet problem. So what this bill would do is to both create requirements for landlords and then also give tenants more power to address the radon in their living situations. So this bill creates these requirements, and the requirements are that the landlords need to test, and then if there is a dangerous level, then it requires mitigation. And so this requirement requires a licensed radon professional to do the testing once every 5 years, and then these results need to be disclosed to both current and prospective tenants. Then if the levels are above what the EPA considers safe, this bill would require mitigation of the radon levels and create a legal responsibility for landlords. And this creates an explicit responsibility to address radon. For tenants, this bill protects current tenants by both requiring this disclosure within 30 days of the results and gives tenants an explicit right of legal action to take against the landlord if the landlord does not address the elevated radon levels. It also protects prospective tenants by increasing the education this bill provides for a publication at the Department of Health about radon in rental properties, and also would improve the transparency by having landlords required to provide information about when the most recent test was, what the results were, and whether they're taking any mitigation efforts. And so I urge the committee to support this bill, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. And we are joined now by Jacqueline Seward, the Program Director of Live Smoke Free. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Chair Hausman and members of the committee. My name is Jackie Seward. I live in Bloomington, Minnesota, and this morning I'd like to talk to you about the importance of clean indoor air in rental housing. I work at the Association for Non-Smokers Minnesota. We're a member of the Minnesota Cancer Alliance. And at the Association for Non-Smokers Minnesota, I serve as the program director for Live Smoke Free. Live Smoke Free promotes and supports smoke-free housing policies in order to protect renters from secondhand smoke exposure. But secondhand smoke isn't the only thing lurking in the air making Minnesota renters sick. Exposure to radon, an invisible odorless toxic gas, is the leading cause of lung cancer among non-smokers. According to the Minnesota Department of Health, 2 in 5 Minnesota homes have high radon levels, including my own. Fortunately, my home has a radon mitigation system, but many who live in rental homes are less fortunate. In fact, 2 years ago, my next door neighbors tested their rental home and found high levels of radon in the basement where their kids slept. When they asked the landlord to install a mitigation system, he declined. They were forced to choose between their home or their children's health because they couldn't afford the mitigation system themselves. They moved shortly thereafter. Everyone deserves a healthy and stable home, including renters and those with few resources. Property owners have a duty to ensure that their properties don't put their renters' health and safety at risk. It's part of the job, and I know this because I'm a former apartment manager of 9 years. Clean indoor air is integral to our health and safety. It's something that everyone deserves, whether you own or rent, whether you have means or not. This bill will prevent the harmful effects of radon exposure with testing, disclosure, and mitigation. I urge you to support this bill and protect the Minnesotans who need it the most. Thank you.
Thank you. And we're joined now by William Engel, the Professor Emeritus from the University of Minnesota. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record. You are on mute. You are on mute.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity, and thank you to the law student clinic members who have drafted this bill and worked on this, and the author of the bill. I'm testifying today as chairman or on behalf of Cancer Survivors Against Radon. I am the current chairman of the board of that group. We're a national group that advocate for cancer survivors, victims, and their next of kin who have experienced lung cancer attributed to radon in their homes. This bill is very important to extend the protections that we've seen that the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and our own Department of Health have helped push for owner-occupants of homes. Unfortunately, the testing in rental properties, the disclosure of those radon concentrations, and the mitigation of high exposure have lagged far, far behind the risk reduction we've seen in owner-occupied housing. The current risk threshold that the US EPA uses for radon of 4 picocuries per liter is not a health-based standard. It's actually 50% above that the World Health Organization recommends. The risk of lung cancer for the general population due to radon exposure in the home lifetime is 23 per thousand. That risk far exceeds the risk of dying in a fire in your home, far, far exceeds that of dying from carbon monoxide exposure in the home. And in Minnesota, the risk exceeds that of dying in an auto accident. This is a very serious risk. It's very important we take action on the rental housing front and help tenants at least have the ability to know what their radon exposure is and make decisions based upon that. and for rental property owners to go ahead and test, report, and mitigate concentrations that exceed EPA's action level. I'm also very active on the National Consensus Standards Front, past president of the Professional Association in the field, the American Association of Radon Scientists and Technologists, and I can testify that we will have, and we do have, the licensees, the capable, and we will have the workforce necessary to be of assistance to rental property owners and managers in Minnesota. Please support this bill. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. And we're joined now by Jill Tigner, Patient and Family Support Manager from A Breath of Hope Lung Foundation. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record. Do we see?
Madam Chair, I don't see her in the participants. Let's see if we can get her back, and otherwise we can move on to the next
step. Let me know if she joins us before we conclude.
Yes.
And we're joined then by Kyle Bernsch, Director of Public Policy, Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Good morning. My name is Kyle Bernsch. I am the Director of Public Policy at the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association, known as MHA. MHA is an industry nonprofit representing 1,800 members and 300,000 rental housing units in the state. I'm here today to respectfully raise MHA's opposition to House File 2463. We appreciate the author's concerns and the other testifiers for radon exposure in housing, but we believe this bill misses the mark. After consultation with some members of MHA, I heard from those I talked to that when a building is being purchased and in some cases refinanced, that radon tests are being regularly conducted at the requirements of federal loan providers and life company financing groups. These groups will require testing and remediation if elevated levels are found for properties financed. This is a specific example where the proposal should consider an exemption to not require additional testing. Today, we better understand the ways that radon collects and how it can be remedied. Under the proposal, testing is required every 5 years and provides no exemptions regardless of the different housing characteristics that exist. As an example, a housing unit which already has a remediation system designed and installed will continue to be professionally tested going forward. Another example is when housing units that are atop an underground parking garage, these parking facilities are already required to be ventilated for CO2 removal and should also be considered for an exemption. There's other examples where an exemption might also be considered. The proposal includes a requirement that all testing must be conducted by licensed professionals. With an immediate 5-year timeframe for the first test, in 5 years, Minnesota could face a serious shortage of available professional staff and testing capabilities. Another issue is this ability to install a radon remediation system within 120 days. Some structures require unique remediation systems, which can delay permitting and installation of the system. A 120-day timeframe may prove to be difficult to achieve in some cases. MHA believes the broad disclosure is unnecessary and should be specific to units on the floors and floors below that were tested positive for radon. Broader disclosure should only be required if the floors were tested positive also have a community room or some common space on that floor. And then finally, this proposal is just another unfunded mandate on housing providers. An MHA member provided to me that the cost for these tests usually land between $100 and $150 for each location tested. The legislature should look to emulate the lead proposal that was just laid over by the committee by incentivizing testing and remediation with state funds. It is important that testing and mitigation efforts are funded to ensure affordability is not negatively impacted. These mandates fall hardest on housing providers who are in the city of St. Paul, where the city has adopted what is the most restrictive rent control policy in the country. These unfunded mandates could jeopardize housing viability in that specific community. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today and committee, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you. Members, questions for the testifiers or the bill author? I see Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And
most likely to Representative Breyer. I do have a lot of problems with this, but I will tell you my background. My husband was a home inspector for 12, 13 years and did radon testing as well, was a certified testing professional, and the costs that are involved with this are very concerning to me, that there's no thought about that whatsoever. Mr. Byrne had said, testing can be $150 per device. And sometimes they will give you a break on that. But to say that it's got to be mediated in 120 days is probably going to be very hard to do with the fact that we have very few professionals in the plumbing or whatever, whomever you call to do the remediation. It's going to be very expensive. If you look at a 100-unit apartment, a ballpark that I got from a friend of ours was starting at $4,000 to $5,000, depending on what you're looking at, how they're going to do that. I don't believe there's enough guidance on how to do the mitigation on an apartment building. I know what it's like for a home, but I don't know for sure what it is for an apartment. We need to find a way to finance this, because as Mr. Burnt said, for housing providers, this is going to be a make or break, because it could be very expensive if they have several or a large unit. It's just not going to be able to happen. You'll never hear me say radon is not important. It is. I know it is. We worked it. We lived it. But there are some questions, and one is on line 1.20. You say the inspector. Representative Ryer, which one are we talking about?
Representative Ryer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Tice. As always, I appreciate your thoughtfulness and your in-depth look at questions. I am just reading that line in context. So the inspector, I am going to ask legal.
Do we have a researcher on the?
Either the researcher or Ms. Mashad from the law school.
Ms. Mashad, would you have an answer to that? Otherwise, we'll see if we can find it.
Yeah. So when we were helping look at this language and draft, we believed the inspector provision links back in with the other landlord-tenant definitions of an inspector. So I believe this is the local housing inspector, and then the statutory provision in 504B. I believe it's 504B.001 is the definitions. Has the definition of who is the inspector, and if there is not a local inspector, then who would be responsible for the inspector's role?
Representative Tice?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Ryer and Ms. Mashad. That would be nice to have that in there so that we know for sure which inspector we're talking about, because there are several different inspectors around. I do see that there's a copy must be provided. A landlord, a housing provider, must provide a copy of the Department of Health's publication. And I believe that's only online. Is that correct?
Is that Ms. Mashad or Representative Ryer?
Representative Ryer.
I thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Tice. I would say if, in fact, it is only available online, then they would be required to provide information where they could obtain that link.
Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Ryer. I just want to make sure, because sometimes, you know, there's, when I look at the effective date as well, and some of these papers, these documents need to be around. I know that often there's a little, oh, I never received it. And so I'm thinking that most of the housing providers are going to download the document and then print it, so that they can say they physically hand it to people, because too many times electronically, and this is my only beef with electronics, is that people will say, well, I never got it. I'm the same way. Well, I never got it. Where did it end up? And people won't check their spam. So I'm a little bit nervous, cautious about that part of it, because How does a housing provider then say that they in fact did give it to the person? So it would be nice if there was maybe a little bit more guidance on whether it has to be electronically, or I would prefer written, a hard copy, so that we could have it within a packet and say, this is the way it is. Especially if we're talking about the ways that we can, you know, tenants can bring forth charges and things like that. I want to make sure that we have those bases covered so that there is a way to prove that, yes, they did get it, or no, they didn't. If they're handed a document, then they can sign off on that. So that would give me a lot more, less heartburn if I knew that there was a way that, in fact, we were making sure that if it was sent electronically, is there a mechanism we can do to say that they did receive it? I know hard copy wise, it's a little bit easier to do that. I do have a problem with the 120 days for mitigation because the construction industry is really short folks, and they're really trying hard to do the best they can. But sometimes you also have a supply issue at this time. And that, again, 120 days just makes me feel really nervous because, again, depending on how big the building is and what they have to do for mitigation, it could be a huge project. And it may take time just to get the crew there, but then it may take time to get the project done. If you're looking at, I realize this might not be your real house, but it depends on if they have drain tile. It depends on how they have to go under the building to get what they need to do. If there's a utility room on the main floor and it's a smaller unit, that might not be as much. But otherwise, I mean, you're starting at $4,000 to $5,000 for anything with any size to it as far as a building goes. I think there's a lot more work that needs to get done with this, and maybe you can do it as you go down the line. Judiciary is next, and I'll be talking to my colleagues there to see that, you know, some of this stuff gets changed, because I really look at, this is going to be really expensive. And if landlords are expected to take care of this, that's going to they may decide just to get out of the business altogether and sell it and have somebody else worry about it. But then again, that's going to be a huge rent issue. I don't see how we're going to talk about rent control and then have some things like this with no funding attached or no mechanism for these housing providers to go to say, hey, I can't afford to do this. If we're going to be that tight on our rent, we're not going to have the money to do it. And things do come up. I will tell you, this past year with five single family homes, we spent well over $25,000, $12,000 alone just on driveways. And that's not including everything else, the furnaces, the dishwashers, the normal stuff. I'm never going to say we don't need to do this, because I do. I do realize what a problem this is. And I will tell you that my husband checks our house every so often. So part of that is just to check into different things, as well as, you know, things can change. And I'm not going to go into the technical stuff of rocks change and all this kind of stuff. But living in the Granite City is a wonderful thing, but it's high radon. And I do appreciate the bill, but I think we need to look at it in a way that we really can have our housing providers do this and do it without really going in the hole and worrying about where is rent going to go from there. Thank you, Representative Ryer. We just need to tweak and look at it and how do we continue to do it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Ryer, it appears that perhaps one of your testifiers, Mr. Engel, has something to add to this point. I'm not certain if you want to follow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Engel, if you wouldn't mind, I would like to first hear from the other representatives who have their hands up, and then see if you have a comment to make.
Thank you. Representative Farr.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Ryer, for the bill. I too understand the importance of this. Just a couple of clarification questions. So an implementation of the 1st of December, does that mean that all these housing providers have to have that tested by the 1st of December, or they have 5 years from that point to meet there every 5 years? I'm just a point of clarification there.
Representative Ryer.
I will again defer to Ms. Michaud on the writing of the bill, but my intent personally would be not that those things were done by December 1st of 2020, but this takes effect and then must begin. That would be my intent. Ms. Michaud, do you have any further questions?
Ms. Michaud.
I'll just affirm what the representative said. That is my understanding as well, is that we would be going into a 5-year. So we would have until 2027.
Representative Farr.
Thank you. That makes more sense to me. Then another question in terms of the testing every 5 years, and I guess I don't know the answer to this one, but I understood radon to be a geological issue. And does that change in a house? I mean, is there a reason for every 5 years are you likely to have an issue 5 years later when you don't today? I didn't think that would be the case. But.
Is that to Representative Ryer? Or?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Farr. I will just point back to Representative Tice's comment about rocks moving, things shifting, and geological conditions evolving, and that they do repeated tests. I am not a geologist, but my understanding is that repeated tests are advisable.
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Representative Ryer. That's all. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Ryer, I understand the need for this. In fact, our home is only about 30 years old, and we had it tested for radon a few years ago and ended up having to put in a mitigation system. So I understand that. I do have some questions on the bill. Some of those have already been mentioned. I'm not going to repeat any of those, but What I don't see in here in reading the language is where the tests have to take place. You might have a duplex. Do you have to test both sides? What if you have in the basement level, if you have apartments throughout that, do you have to test in all of the units? What if it's a large apartment building? I don't see any of those details in here that would actually spell out where those tests would have to take place. So would a housing provider, you know, have to do multiple tests in multiple areas of the same building or just one location in the building? Would that suffice? And if that's the case, is that really accurate anyway? I mean, those are some of the questions I have. Can you maybe help provide some more detail?
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Juergens. My comment on that is that the spirit of the bill is that testing would occur where testing is needed. If structurally and because of the design of the building, it needs to happen in multiple locations, then it must happen in multiple locations. If only one is needed, then one would be needed. However, I can see that that will be an area that we'll want to take back and further clarify in the language of the bill.
Okay, thank you. I guess, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my only recommendation is that keep working on this. I mean, I think that the goal is right, but I think that you know, some of those details need to be worked out first, and I look forward to seeing this come back through.
It sounded not as though the bill author was making some note of that. Any further questions, Representative Juergens?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Ryer, we have a testifier who is wanting to add some additional information, if that, should we revert to a testifier?
With your permission, I would agree that Mr. Engel could make a brief comment.
Mr. Engel.
Once again, thank you for the questions and testimony that's been expressed. My last name again is Angel.
Clarification.
And I have been active on national standards development for measurement in single family townhouses and multifamily buildings. Also present on those work groups has been the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development and quite a number of others. they've been done under the American National Standard Institute. So they're gold standard quality standards. Those are the standards that are cited by the Minnesota Department of Health. Also by 2013, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, based upon their knowledge of those standards, felt compelled to require any multifamily property that was seeking federal housing mortgage insurance to be tested, as our MHF or MHA representative mentioned. That is a one-time test to qualify for mortgage. And it's also a policy that is followed by Minnesota Housing, but it does not apply to the private sector. This bill, in effect, would transfer that action, testing, disclosure, and mitigation in those forums. And that's at least some comments that I have. And if there's anything else I can do to help clarify, please let me know. I'll be happy to do that. Thank you.
In the next committee, you may be doing that as well. Final comments on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my apologies for mispronouncing your name, Mr. Angel. I would like to just wrap up by saying I appreciate all of the comments from my colleagues and also from Mr. Berndt, who's had comments in advance. Conversations in advance, and then finally to all the testifiers. We are taking this on and considering other aspects of the bill. We will be reaching out to you for more input. I do want to say, though, on the cost piece, and first of all, that I don't think the rent control matter in St. Paul is really relevant simply because we're talking about a statewide program here, and I'd like to just have that issue set aside. But we are talking in the work on the bill about ways to potentially defray those costs either through loan or grant programs. So we'll follow up with you on that, because I think that's something that we've been talking about and hadn't worked through all the details yet, and plan to have that ready in time for our next hearing. So with that, I want to thank you all and ask for your support to move this on to the Judiciary Committee.
And would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, Madam Speaker, I renew my motion that House File 2463 is amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law.
Thank you, Representative Ryer. Ms. Hirsch, please take the roll.
Chair Houseman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Howard?
Aye.
Representative Tice?
No.
Representative Agbaje?
No.
Representative Bliss?
No.
Representative Gomez?
Gomez, aye.
Representative Hassan?
Hassan votes aye.
Representative Heinrich?
Heinrich votes no.
Representative Herr?
Aye.
Representative Juergens?
Juergens, no.
Representative Olson is excused. Representative Farr?
Farr votes no.
And Representative Ryer?
Ryer, aye.
We have 7 ayes and 5 nays.
There being 7 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails. And House File 2463, as amended, is passed and goes on to Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. Thank you very much. And members, the last bill on the agenda is House File 1635. And as the author of the bill, I will hand over the virtual gavel to Vice Chair Howard for the remainder of the committee hearing.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. And would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I'll move that House File 1635 be laid over for possible inclusion.
The chair lays over House File 1635 to be laid over. And I believe you have an amendment to your bill. Would you like to move the A2?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we're using the underlying bill from last year, which had the dollar amounts that went into our committee budget. And so we're just changing that dollar amount, which is a smaller amount, $643,000, to be added to the 2021 base. That's the point of the amendment.
I do not see any hands. If members would unmute themselves, we'll vote on the A2. All those in favor of the A2, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the amendment is adopted. Representative Hausman, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So House File 1635 is the Homeownership Education, Counseling, and Training Program. That amount of general fund will provide grants to community-based organizations to help prepare buyers for success through the full cycle of purchasing and buying a home. It also assists those looking to refinance and those at risk of foreclosure. In addition to state funding, the Homeownership Center, the Family Housing Fund, and Greater Minnesota Housing Fund also contribute to HECAP. Some participants participate in a class and they're ready to go. Others work with advisors up to 2 years, so it does vary in terms of the amount of time people need. HECAP-funded services are the gateway for most down payment assistance and first-time homebuyer loan programs, so it can prepare the way for some of that additional help. As you might well imagine, demand for these services has increased in these last few years, and that is why we are seeking to add a bit to the base in a supplemental bill. That's the bill, and I have some testifiers.
All right, up first on our list for testifiers is Julie Guggen with the Minnesota Homeownership Center. Ms. Guggen.
Hello, good morning. Thanks for having me. Chair Houseman, Vice Chair Howard, and members of the committee, my name is Julie Guggen. I am the president of the nonprofit Minnesota Home Ownership Center. The center believes that owning a home is a foundation for personal success. For over 25 years, we've worked to educate potential home buyers on the complicated process of qualifying for a mortgage, affording down payment and closing costs, and transitioning to sustainable home ownership. We've carried out this work by partnering with more than 40 community-based organizations every year throughout the state to offer unbiased advisory services and our home stretch ownership curriculum. Because homeownership is the main way that households in this country create wealth, we focus our work toward those that have traditionally been left out of the homeownership space, households of color and lower income households. Last year, 63% of the households we served represented communities of color. The median income was just over $43,000. Of the approximately 5,200 households we reached, 3,700 were in the metro area and over 1,500 in greater Minnesota. We know for a fact that Minnesota renters aspire to be homeowners. In a survey we conducted in 2019, more than half of respondents indicated they plan to buy a home within the next 5 years. But the uneven impact of COVID, rising home values, stagnant wages prevalent in certain industries, and constrained inventory are creating unprecedented barriers to the achievement of this aspiration, especially for those we work with. When coupled with historic racism and lingering systemic bias, we find ourselves living with one of the highest homeownership gaps in the country. The gap between white households and households of color in Minnesota exceeds 50%. This is not acceptable. The Minnesota Homeownership Center is intent on reversing homeownership injustice and averting the threats posed by homeownership challenges to individual households, our communities, and our collective economy. It's in this spirit that I'm here today to speak in support of House File 1635 and your amendment, as it would fund additional monies for homeownership assistance programs and allow this important work to be expanded and enhanced. Homeownership education and advising are proven tools that have helped thousands of Minnesota families over the years. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. And up next, we have Portia Jackson. Ms. Jackson.
Good morning. My name is Portia Jackson, and I'm a mother of five and first-generation homeowner in North Minneapolis. I'm here today to offer my personal testimony from that perspective. I am also currently a community development specialist for Ramsey County, and I've been asked to add Ramsey County supports HF 1635 and the goals behind this bill. Thank you, Representative Houseman, for introducing this bill. 10 years ago, homeownership was not in my purview. I had a Section 8 voucher for 9 years and thought that that would be my housing story forever. Until I went in for recertification and found out that my rent portion had increased to $1,200 per month as I had finished my bachelor's degree and my earnings increased greatly. I decided to voluntarily remove myself from the program and rented a home in the open rental market. For a couple of years, I rented a nice home in South Minneapolis for a little under $1,500 a month. One day, as I was writing my rent check for the month, I thought, I'm paying my landlord's mortgage. I should be paying my own. So I decided to research how I could buy a house. My goal was to purchase a home that was big enough for my large family, close to mass transit, and at a payment that was less than what I paid in renting. I needed the guidance of someone that understood my goal and could break down what I needed to do to get there. I found the Minnesota Homeownership Center's website, which helped me find PRG, a housing advising agency in my neighborhood. I met with Aaron Wilson, who helped me develop a plan to improve my credit, save money for a down payment, and pointed me to a culturally specific financial literacy education program offered by Bill Wealth Minnesota. I paid off things on my credit, saved money, and obtained an MHFA mortgage loan to purchase my home that I closed on July 31st, 2015. I could not have done this without the knowledge and expertise of my homeownership advisor, Aaron. Homeownership advisors bridge the gap for those who want to buy a home and do not know where to start. They not only walk you through the entire home buying process, they also take your individual situation into account and assist you in creating a plan to get you where you want to be. They are there every step of the way, all the way through closing and beyond. I found this work to be so important that I became a homeownership advisor in 2016 and still work in homeownership today, working to decrease the racial homeownership gap in Ramsey County in Minnesota. I have been a homeowner for almost 7 years. Since purchasing, two of my children have graduated high school, started careers, opened businesses, and have excelled in school, and also become immersed in our neighborhood. Homeownership has become the foundation for the future of our family, and my hope is that more families are able to make their homeownership dreams a reality. In order to do that, we will need a concentrated effort through education and advising, down payment assistance, and the building of entry-level homes. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Jackson, for that really valuable personal perspective about this bill. That is our last testifier. Are there questions from members? If not, I can turn it back to Representative Houseman for any final comments on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I would just say the story that Ms. Jackson just proves to us what we often say, and that is home ownership is how we build wealth. And that was a discovery that she made through her life story. So thank you, members.
I'm not seeing any questions. Thank you, Representative Houseman. House file.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tice has a question.
Sorry to jump the gun on you, Representative Tice. Go ahead.
Thank you. I just have a hard time sometimes finding that mute button and all that kind of stuff, or raise your hand. I just want to thank you, Representative Chair Houseman, because this truly is needed. As I said, my husband's been in We've been in housing and doing home inspections for years, but one of the things we find is people just don't know what buying a house all means. And so I really appreciate this. And I think this is after hearing Ms. Jackson's story, it's like, yeah, this is a good deal. So thank you for bringing it forward.
Thanks, Representative Tice. Anything further, Representative Houseman?
I just thank the members.
All right, with that, House File 1635 as amended is laid over. Members, our next meeting will be on Thursday, March 3rd, and there being no other business before the committee, we are adjourned.